Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials.
All right, I have a case for us today.
Yeah, I know.
Would you like to know what it's dubbed first, or do you want me to just give you the background first?
It's up to you. I've probably heard of it. Maybe. If it's like a popular case at all.
I don't know if it is or not. It's called the Chillicothe Six. Have you heard of it?
Not off the top of my head, I guess.
All right. Well, it took place over 14 months in 2014 to 2015. Several women disappeared during this time in the area of Chillicothe, Ohio. And only four of them were found dead, and then two of them were never seen or heard from again. And some of them showed signs of violence, which we'll get into in a little bit. Only one victim out of the six got justice because their murderer was convicted. And it wasn't tied to other cases, according to police. So, their belief is that this might be six separate incidences. There may have been a serial killer, or who knows? They never figured it out. So that's fun, right?
I mean, the amount of cases that go unsolved is very high. Most, like, I don't know. I guess I'm not that shocked.
So it was a rural community. They were dealing with the weight of an addiction crisis, like people moving to this little town and then bringing along with them, like, some of the articles said sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but, you know, whatever.
That dang rock and roll.
Yeah, I know. Some of the Chillicothe Six turned to sex work to fulfill their drug needs, and also they were considered to be easy targets, which we've talked about before with sex workers as well. So, you ready to hear about the victims?
Yeah.
Our first victim is Charlotte Trago. As of 2019, there is no body. She would be 30 years old now, and she went missing when she was like 28, 27, somewhere in there. And there was record that she has or had an addiction to prescription drugs and heroin. She was previously known to be suicidal, and she was last seen May 3rd of 2014 and reported, I thought this was interesting, reported in missing 5/18 of 2014 by her mother. She went like over 2 weeks without reporting her missing.
I mean, unfortunately, that's not that surprising with people who are working in sex work or who are, you know, struggling with drug addiction, because it's not that uncommon for them to disappear for that long.
Right. But her mother gave a statement that they're close enough to each other that she would have checked in that amount of time, which is why I think she waited a little bit, but at the same time.
Yeah, also, police love to say, especially when victims are like, you know, have a history of drug use or whatever, oh, you know, they'll just come back, they've just gone off to do their thing. And a lot of, I know, like, police's favorite thing to do is to say, oh, you have to wait a certain amount of time to report somebody missing. If you ever have somebody go missing and they tell you that, tell them that no. There's no law anywhere in the United States that says that they have to wait a certain amount of time to report somebody missing. Anywhere. It's not a law. It might be their policy, but it's not a law.
Right. Which I feel like a lot of people don't know, because we're always told, like, 24 to 72 hours or some ridiculous amount of time. Especially if it's a child.
Yeah. Which also, like, irks me, because, you know, there's a reason that there's a show called The First 48. And that's because if a crime's going to be solved, it's most likely going to happen in the first 48 hours. And you're not even letting people report it for the first 48 hours. It's so ridiculous. But anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I digress.
All right. Our second victim is Tamika Lynch. She was a friend of Trago's. She was reported missing the last day that Trago was seen, which was May 3rd, 2014. 3 weeks later, her body actually was found by kayakers in Paint Creek. And the autopsy concluded she likely died of a drug overdose, but the family believes that there was foul play involved. Third is Wanda Lemons, and she disappeared October 3rd, 2014. She would be 40 years old now. She has a history of drug abuse. The last communication through Facebook Messenger was to her adult child. That's the last they heard from her, that she had gone to Texas to meet with Darius or DeMarcus Thomas. Never was heard from again, and was unusual for her to not keep in touch. Connection to Trago, Lemons, Lynch, and Sire, all from the same city in the 1 year period, so all from Chillicothe, Ohio. That's why they're called the Chillicothe Six, is because they all, like, disappeared right around the same time, and they're all, like, in similar situations. But the interesting thing that I found was that a lot of them were, like, even though they were dealing with addiction and, like, in sex work, they definitely, like, kept a connection to their families, and they're like, okay, something weird is going on. They're not just gonna, like, disappear, you know? They're not, they don't just have, like, no one.
Right. It definitely, I would definitely agree that there's, it's pretty likely that at least some of these are connected. Like, the woman that we just talked about who was saying she was going to Texas, you know, potentially she did leave the state and just never made it to Texas, or did make it to Texas and then something happened there. That one leaves a little more room for interpretation, I guess, or, like, room right. for other things to have happened. But, yeah, I mean, it's very unlikely, especially, like you said, this is a very rural town, for six women in a year to go missing, four of which were found dead and stuff like that, so.
One thing that I skipped over about Charlotte Trago, our first victim, is that she was evicted by her roommate and took off on foot and was never seen again. So that was on May 3rd, 2014, which her and Tamika were best friends, so I'm wondering if they took off together.
Yeah, maybe.
Alright, and then our fourth victim is Shasta Heimlich. I'm so sorry I'm pronouncing that wrong, but she disappeared on Christmas Day of 2014. Her body was found in an icy... It was basically like an icy river nearby, or like a little creek. Her death was ruled a suicide, but her family believes it was murder. Family says she was newly happy about being pregnant because she, like, was just pregnant. And then the only thing that really raised a red flag for them was that she lost her father back in August of the same year. But she was, like, not... She had a previous history of being suicidal, but she was, like, jazzed to, like, be having a baby and stuff.
Jazzed. Yeah,
like, it was just... There's a little bit more detail that we know about Shasta. So, her boyfriend's name was Michael Ose, and then Christmas night, she was partying... This is a statement from him. He was partying with Shasta and a male friend at their house, so Shasta in his house. She left. Shasta left on 12/26, so the day after Christmas, at 1 a.m. to get one of the male friend's girlfriends. The male friend has multiple girlfriends, and he went unnamed. In town, along with cocaine and Percocet. Same drugs were found in her system, according to the autopsy as well. While Shasta was gone, her boyfriend left the house with his male friend to go see the male friend's other girlfriend. According to the article, Shasta blew up, that's what they said in quotes, his phone due to being unhappy with the situation that Oz had just left her there by herself. He had 30 plus missed calls. He only answered two of the calls, and there was also a string of texts saying that she was mad, and there was nothing after 2:32 a.m., which is the last time that they talked. The 2:30 a.m. was the last time they talked, and the last text was at 2:32 a.m. And then Shasta claimed that she was on old US 35 passing the old schoolhouse and would be home soon at 3 a.m. Oz and his friend returned home. Shasta wasn't there. And they claimed they checked the old US 35, the hospital, the jail, the girl that she met with earlier, and police confirmed the phone data by going through Oz's phone.
Okay.
We also know that there was an ATM receipt for $40 found in the car she was driving that night, indicated at 3:13 a.m. on December 26th, leading deputies to the East Main Street Speedway and the surveillance video photo released to the media. The video shows that Heimelrich was alone. At 3:33 a.m., Heimelrich possibly tried to send a text message from her second cell phone, which was reported to not have worked since December 21st, 2014. On January 1st, 2015, a detective was able to turn the phone on and found a text message to Ose reading, "I'm sorry, loved you." It's unclear whether Ose ever received that text message. A Chillicothe report from July 30th, 2014, 3 days before her dad died, alleged Heimelrich had attempted suicide, according to the sheriff's report. At 10:24 a.m., December 26th, the car Heimelrich was driving was found by sheriff deputies who responded to the report from an off-duty Pike County deputy of a suspicious car on Hakeby Road with its interior lights on and the passenger door partially open, according to the sheriff's report. And I just want to point out that, like, not all of these victims have it as a detailed case. And, like, some of them have a more, like, in-depth of, like, what happened that other ones don't. But there is, like, a Facebook page. If anyone has any information about these women that went missing, there's a Facebook page and they're still looking for them. It's been updated as of, like, I think 2020, but they still haven't been found. The two that were missing and never heard from again. The car had frost on it, and inside were Heimlich's two cell phones, a syringe with a needle broken off, and blood smears on the headrest and the back of the driver's seat. Deputies reported collecting blood samples and checking for prints, but not being able to find any. A detective later returned to look for drag marks or other signs of struggle in the area of the bridge and found nothing, according to the report. They later took the car as evidence after it initially had been released, and on December 31st, 2014, found a pack of Bic razors with one broken open and a blade with blood on it. A search of the area began on December 27th, and during the December 30th search, a pair of dogs led deputies from where her car had been to the bridge where a pair of house shoes had been found. Her body was found on January 2nd in the Scioto River, about 1.5 miles downstream. A few tips or possible sightings were listed in the report, including one man claiming he was driving on Hakeby Road at 5:30 a.m. on December 26th when he saw a blonde woman with two men in a vehicle. The man told deputies he also saw the car Heimelrich was driving sitting with its dome light on, like it was found 5 hours later. What are your thoughts?
I would say it's hard to, like, form an opinion at all right now.
Okay. So, our fifth victim is Tiffany Sire. She was 26 years old. She disappeared in May of 2015. Her body was found wrapped in a tarp and discarded in a culvert. Family does not believe it was her body that was the one that was recovered.
Who doesn't?
And then the family.
Oh, okay. How'd they identify the body?
So, the family wanted tangible proof as to knowing that it was actually her. They are saying, the aunt says, "They are fighting us on everything. If you're for sure 100% that it's her, then why don't you give us everything we deserve? Why are you fighting it? Fighting us if it was her?" They won't give her, like, a lab report or DNA testing or an autopsy or anything.
So they won't give,
the
autopsy report?
No.
Okay. They didn't tell them, like, how they discovered or how they identified it was her?
It says, officials say the test confirmed again the body is Tiffany. The first confirmation came from fingerprints, but the Ohio Attorney General Office won't give the family the lab report.
Oh, okay. So, is there a specific reason that the family doesn't think it's her?
Her aunt Samantha has always doubted whether the body that was found was hers. In January 2016, she voiced her doubt to the Gazette, saying the Chillicothe Gazette, so like the town paper. "There's too many loose ends to the story." She said that none of the details, nothing has really changed for her since, especially as details shared with the family have changed at times during the past 24 months. "Some details don't seem to match up, and they have a fight every step of the way to get records." So basically, things aren't adding up. Like, the evidence, they just keep, like, saying different things. The first frustrations came in getting a copy of the autopsy, like I said. The initial requests by the family were made before a cause of death was issued by the Highland County coroner, Dr. Jeff Beery. until the cause and manner of death are decided, the report remains an investigative work product protected by the public records law, and it prevents the issuance of a death certificate. Families need to settle affairs. And this article came out in 2017, so like two years after she died.
Yeah, so from my point of view with this, I'm -5% shocked that they're fighting them every step of the way, because that just is their favorite thing to do. I mean, and don't get me wrong, like, there are definitely people who have positive experiences with the police when, you know, their loved one is murdered or something like that, and yada yada. But the overwhelming amount or majority of stories I've heard are just, you know, fighting tooth and nail, you can't get a hold of them, they won't give us any information, which, yes, for some of the information, there's a reason they don't want to give it out, and that's because they don't want anything to put a potential case in jeopardy. But, at the same time, the loved ones of these victims still deserve, like, closure and respect and stuff like that. So, I'm not shocked at all. But I'm also not really sure why the cops would lie about it being her.
I'm not sure either. And the, like, person that did the autopsy report, Dr. Beery, said that he was prepared to hand over the autopsy and toxicology report. It was completed in September. And he was planning on giving it to them November 2015, but was stopped by the county sheriff.
Okay.
Who was a spokesman for the task force investigating the murder.
So, yeah, I mean, so I remember when we first started this podcast that I had mentioned that I wanted to reach out to get, like, case files and stuff like that. And you were like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. So, there is a law called the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, that requires the police or any, like, governmental institution to release records to the general public when requested. Obviously, there's caveats to that. The police can deny those requests when an investigation is still open. So, in this case, I'm assuming that's what they're saying is, oh, well, it's still an open investigation. We don't want to, like, jeopardize our investigation. So, legally, they're doing nothing wrong, but, you know, morally, debatable. But, yeah, I mean, normally when they're doing a confirmation of a person's identity, they're either going to have a close family member or friend come identify the body, look at it, and be like, yes, that's them. They're going to do dental records, which, depending on the person, can be difficult because if somebody, you know, has never really been to the dentist, such as is the case for some people living on the streets or addicted to drugs and stuff like that, then that can be difficult. Or if it's been, like, a really, really long time since they've been to the dentist, you know, their teeth could have changed a lot. And then the third way is through DNA or fingerprints, something like that. So, one interesting fact about fingerprints, though, is that there's never been a representative study done that proves that fingerprints are unique. And in recent years, judges have been throwing fingerprint evidence out because of that. Because you can't give any sort of statistics. Like, oh yeah, this is like, there's like a 1 in 1 billion% chance that this is, like, this guy's fingerprints. Because there's never been, like, a whole-scale, like, scientific research done into, are fingerprints actually unique? But, like, if you go around and ask, like, any child, they'll be like, yeah, fingerprints are unique.
Right, because that's what we're told.
Yeah. So, it's interesting, for sure.
So, the person that was, like, I was just talking about the spokesperson for the task force, had concerns because the task force didn't want it known yet that there was no signs of violence on the body and there was presence of intoxicants. And the photos of the body also hadn't been sent for review by a forensic farm in Tennessee in an effort to establish the time of death, and there's no indication in the autopsy or Beery's notes whether those photos were ever sent or what was or wasn't determined. In December of 2015, 6 months after the body was found, Ohio's Vital Statistics Department began questioning why no determination had been made. On January 15, 2016, Beery made his ruling that while a cause of death cannot be determined, the manner of death was homicidal violence. Which there's a quote from him that says, this case was clearly a homicide from the beginning. Although the autopsy records could have been released at that time, the family didn't receive them until another formal request was made in August 2016 by an attorney. So in 2016, the Sires began talking with Radical Media, which is producing the upcoming docuseries Gone, The Forgotten Women of Ohio. So that might be out already. We could watch that. I haven't looked into it.
If it's on, like, Netflix or Hulu or anything, I've probably seen it.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Hey guys, it's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. I just want to let you know that we appreciate you listening, and if you want to support us more, go ahead and leave us 5 stars anywhere that you can. You can also tip us on Anchor, you can find us on social media, on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials, and we just introduced merch, so be sure to check that out too. You can find that in the link in our Instagram bio. It's pretty great merch, and we are also taking listener requests. So if you're interested in sending in a case that you want to hear about, reach out to us through social media, or you can email us at truecrimewithmillennials@gmail.com. Be sure to check out our science podcast, which is Science with Millennials. We have new episodes of that on every Wednesday, and we cover a variety of topics. And then now True Crime with Millennials is going to be coming out on Mondays, so look forward to that. Back to the episode.
So they were able to arrange a meeting to see one picture from the autopsy, a tattoo of the name Joseph, and when they saw it, her aunt said she and her mother, like, Sire's mother, instantly doubted it was Tiffany's, the victim. The aunt said the lettering looked wrong, it had too much color, and it was, quote-unquote, too perfect. It was not an actual photo. It was on a computer. Anyone could Google it, put his name up there, and make your own tattoo, and say, here, ha, there you go. I'm not dumb. Sorry, I don't believe it. So they're, like, really skeptical that they actually found them.
I mean, I don't fault them at all for being skeptical. You should always be skeptical of the police. But at the same time, I'm just not sure what they would get out of. Like, that, like, yes, they could make up that. But, like, why?
Right.
Cops may suck, but they usually don't go around just making shit up for no reason. There has to be, usually there's some sort of gain in it for them, like getting drugs or, you know, keeping their jobs or whatever, you know, like they generally don't just go around doing shady shit for no reason. So unless it's like some sort of, like, they're trying to cover something up, but I don't know what that would be. I don't know. It just doesn't really make sense to me. Not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, because it was wrapped, her body was wrapped in a tarp, but, like, who knows how long it was there, and, like, if they're actually getting the timeline right or whatever, because it was, like, I guess terribly, like, decomposed, but her clothes were still in, like, good shape.
Well, I mean, getting a time of death accurate is pretty difficult. Those body farms that you mentioned, those are so interesting, though. My anthropology professor in college had worked with several of them to do a bunch of different experiments, and it was super interesting.
Gotcha. The whole case, I mean, there's still one more victim, but the whole case, it, like, really intrigued me, because it was, like, they all have a common background for the most part. And, like, they all went missing from this tiny little town.
Yeah.
Or podunk town, as you would say.
Well, one thing I will point out, though, is that that is a very, like, at-risk population. So,
right.
Not victim blaming at all. Like, you know, they deserve to be safe just as much as everybody else does. But just as far as, like, a statistical perspective goes, it like, the fact that they all have a common background could just be because that's, they're a very, like, at-risk population.
Alright, so our sixth victim is Timberly Clater. Her body was found near a vacant building, and she was shot to death, and we actually know who killed her, which is shocking. So the murderer's name was Jason McCrary. They decided that he was guilty after only 3 hours of deliberation. And McCrary's tried to blame someone else named Ernest Dollabill Moore.
I hope that that's his legal middle name. Dollabill.
From the backseat of the car that McCrary was driving when Clater was shot. So McCrary was already serving prison time and now faces life in prison because of the shooting. So actually, something else I found interesting was that one of the jurors excused herself because of the nature of the crime. Like, she couldn't handle it. She burst into tears and said, I can't do this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's incredibly difficult to be on, like, a jury like that.
So he shot her. The thing about Clater is that she was a 38-year-old mother of five, which is really sad. She left behind five kids. And he shot her 3 times in the head. It doesn't say whether it was the back of the head or, the, you know, whatever. But
that sounds pretty personal.
Yeah.
A little bit of anger happening there.
Yeah, and there's no, like, history on, like, what their history was or anything. So, I guess there is a little bit. It says that he saw Clater at the Valero gas station that night on May 29, 2015. He asked her if he would be interested in having sex for money, and they agreed. They met in the alley behind the Valero and drove to the Speedway gas station. What is with Speedway and these people? They drove to the Speedway gas station where McCrary went inside and spoke to the cashier, gave Clater the money, and they left. Clater asked McCrary to drive her to a parking lot off East Main where Moore walked out of a home. So this is Dollabill that we're talking about. And asked for a ride in exchange for drugs. McCrary drove them out to the Maisieville home where he was staying with Nicole Perkins, who was gone for the night. I don't know who Nicole Perkins is, but McCrary said he and Clater had sex in the car while Moore stood in the driveway. When McCrary discovered Clater was on her menstrual cycle, he went inside to shower and get her feminine products. He walked outside to find Moore still waiting on his ride. McCrary said then he started driving Moore and Clater back to Chillicothe. When Moore accused Clater and a friend of stealing from him, which she denied. The argument led to Moore, who McCrary said was in the backseat, to shoot Clater and drag her body into the weeds near the old Maisieville dairy bar. Just giving the context of, like, how rural this area is.
Let me tell you, though, if somebody ever tells me, hey, just wait in the driveway while I fuck somebody in this car, I'm gonna be like, literally, no. Never. Right? I'm not standing in your driveway while you fuck somebody in a car. Outside your right. house. Like, what are we doing here? We are all grown ass adults.
I mean, I guess it was nice of him to get her feminine products, but, you know.
Yeah, well, nice stops counting when you shoot someone in the back of the head 3 times, or in the front of the head 3 times, yeah, or exactly. In the head at all, or shoot someone, but yeah.
McCrary also claimed that Clater had smoked the last of his crack cocaine, and so he murdered her because of that.
Did she, like, smoke it without him knowing? Like, don't let her smoke your crack cocaine, then.
Right. I'm assuming it's when he, like, went in the house.
I don't know. That sounds like his fault for leaving his crack cocaine in the car.
Right. The Ross County Common Pleas Judge, Michael Ader, said, you essentially killed a woman because she dared to smoke the last bit of your crack cocaine. He still insisted that he was just an accomplice and not the one that actually killed her, though. And then, interestingly enough, but not surprising, other women went missing but were later found. Many were sex workers and or were battling addiction issues. So this was just running rampant in this small town. They were reported missing during the time of the disappeared/dead bodies that were being found, so I'm thinking that it kind of caused, like, a kind of a hysteria type of situation. Right. I have some more details about Lynch as well. When she first disappeared, police told her husband that they had no reason to believe she was in danger. Tamiko was found only in a pair of socks and she was dead, and her husband said the seeds of mistrust had been sown with the police.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. The incident seemed to have invited sex traffickers, or thoughts that it could invite it as well. And police were also not sure whether the disappearances were the work of a single serial killer, or perhaps sex trafficking or operation preying on vulnerable women was operating in the city. Meanwhile, many of the other women knew each other and were known to do drugs with each other and or do sex work with each other, possibly lending credence to the idea that sex trafficking was an issue in the disappearances. So, I have a little bit more detail on Miss Wanda Lemons. She's the one that is missing still, and her body wasn't found, and she had written messages via Facebook to her eldest daughter. And she's also the one that went to Texas, or said she was going there, and apparently she frequented the Galveston, Texas area. They do believe that her disappearance was connected with the other ones that we were talking about. Yeah, there's, like, heavy speculation, though, that... The other thing I found interesting, too, was, like, not all of the victims were white, but, like, 5 out of the 6 were, but they had, like, similar, like, if you see the pictures of them, they're pretty similar, like, how they look.
Yeah.
Interesting, oddly enough. Like, it's a lot of, like, Caucasian females. They're all around the same weight. They either have, like, brown hair and blue eyes, or blonde hair and brown eyes.
So definitely could be a serial killer with a type.
Right. And I think that, yeah, Tamiko was friends with Charlotte. So those two, like, Tamiko was killed, but she definitely doesn't fit the profile of, like, what if it were a serial killer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but it could have been unrelated, or it could have been, you know, she saw something or knew something, or... Right. You know, there's other reasons that serial killers will kill other than just, you know, to meet their needs or whatever.
Right, exactly. So they were, like, ages... Charlotte was 28, Wanda Lemons is 38, but they were all, like, involved in drugs and sex work in this small town, so it's like... And I just, you know, it's a lot of people go missing in a small place.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. The, like, Sashta would be, well, Tamika and Sashta to me are the big ones that stand out that, like, don't necessarily fit the same victim profile. Mm-hmm. Like, because Sashta has blonde hair and Tamika is not white, so.
Shasta, I think her boyfriend killed her.
Yeah.
Like, out of speculation, just because his story is so all over the place.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible that, like, some of these were linked together. Like, if I just saw, you know, the other 4, I would say, yeah, for sure. That seems like they could be related, for sure.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, because it seems like there's not a ton of information about these.
And, like, for the most part, Tamiko was, like, barely covered.
Yeah, of course.
I was really angry. I was, like, trying to do research on her, and I'm like, why is there... I mean, like, there wasn't a lot of information. The most amount of information was on Lemons and then the other missing girl. Like, there wasn't a lot of information on the women that had actually died.
Yeah.
Which you'd think there would be more because they died, you know? Like, it was just real basic, oh, she was shot in the head, or, like... You know, and then the most amount of information I had to do was from, like, really digging deep. It wasn't just, like, surface-level right, information. Yeah.
That's always tough.
But yeah, that's the Chillicothe 6, which I actually found out earlier, just before we started recording this, that there was speculation that there was a serial killer on the loose that was started in Ohio with the Chillicothe 6, and then moved to Illinois and killed some more people, and then there was one other state. But... It's not confirmed that it was actually him that did it, so...
Oh, okay.
It's just been speculated that it was him.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That was a case I hadn't heard about.
Well, I'm glad. Like I said, though, if anyone has any information about these women, especially the 2 missing ones, I'm sure it would be great for the families to know that they're, like... Or, like, at least know what happened to them. You can contact the Chillicothe Police Department, or, you know, someone in Ohio. maybe not them. They don't seem like they're super great at figuring things out, and kind of seem like they want to cover things up a little bit because it's not, like, flashy, I guess, you know? Because a big thing, we had all these murders and disappearances. I don't know. That's just kind of the vibe they gave me. Especially with how long they held on to that one autopsy report. Any final comments on our case here?
No, I mean, definitely, other than what you said, you know, if you know anything, definitely let somebody know. It'd be good for the families to get some closure. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this case, like, the deficiencies in this case by the police are not shocking at all to me. Like, I know you're not really a true crime person like I am, but I
also just, like, not that I don't care, I just, like, I've always, like, been a person to kind of, like, shun the police and use that as a last-ditch effort, because I know how corrupt they can be.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, this is not surprising at all. I listen to so many true crime podcasts and other things that just are, this is a very common theme, you know? No answers. It's impossible for the family to get in contact with them, you know. So.
It's just super frustrating.
For sure.
And, like, I feel like we're in 2022 now. We should have a better system. But I guess it takes time to develop, or I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely don't have any answers. I'm just angry.
Yep. Well, thanks for joining us today on True Crime with Millennials. I know I said that last time when we did the Cheryl Miller case that that was probably going to be the only time, but I actually had an extra hour or so before we recorded the Science with Millennials episode. So I was like, I'm going to spend it doing a true crime episode. Give Rachel a little bit of a break.
Rachel is thankful for that because Rachel needed a break this weekend. Rachel is very tired, and I don't know why I'm speaking in the third person, so.
It's fine. CJ is also tired and dehydrated.
Yeah.
What else is new? Alrighty. Peace out, rainbow trout.
Alright, bye.